I'm finally 23, I've seen so many countries I thought I'd never get to see, and I understand the blessing I've been given by being able to get in front of an audience. And sometimes I wish I could take this back and find a way back to the friendships I had before I started chasing after all of this. When everybody else is getting married and having kids, and I'm trying to get rid of the thought that over the next 5 years she left because she wanted to have children. But I...
So that was the song I Hope I'm Not Wrong by Hotel Books, who we talked to this week. Cam, I should say. We didn't talk to Hotel Books. We talked to Cam Smith.
Well, okay. I think it's confusing because Cam is Hotel Books, and like he has a guy that he writes with. But he's the face of it, so...
So do we call him Hotel Books, or do we call him Cam?
Well, he's Cam.
We're gonna call him Cam.
He's so much fun, you guys. I can't wait for you to listen.
Literally, I was editing the episode last night. It was the first time Ian ever listened to the podcast, because I didn't have my headphones on, and he just came up and sat with me while I was editing it. And he could not stop laughing. Like...
You know what? We're hilarious all the time, so he should appreciate us for what we do, even though Cam is probably way funnier than us.
He's definitely way funnier. I mean, it's rare that I listen back to things and, like, I'm crying laughing.
That's me constantly, because I think I'm hilarious. Nobody else thinks I'm funny, but I think
we're funny, and I'll, like, get a smile, but to have me, like, audibly laughing while I'm sitting in my bed editing the audio is not something that frequently happens.
I don't know. My favorite thing, I think I'm funniest when I'm playing off my brother, because he's funny. And so when we go back and forth, we can be funny together. But I don't know. I just don't have that with anybody else, really. I don't.
I'm hard. I'm like, I'm just a stone wall.
No, you're not. I've obviously been able to make jokes off you. Otherwise, there would be no jokes on the podcast.
You should just replace me with your brother.
Never. I did one time, though.
You did. You can't say never.
To be fair, I didn't replace you. I was
on a cruise.
Yeah, so, and we needed an episode, and I was like, hey, Brent!
Which episode was that? I think it's 2 in our...
Probably.
...current lineup. I mean, it's probably, like, episode 13
or something. It's probably
the
second episode.
But I think it's the second episode that we have available still. So if you want to hear Stormy's brother be funny...
You know what? I'm going to find out right now. Actually, if you want to hear my brother be actually funny, you should go listen to his podcast, Idiot Sandwich. Because that's genuinely funny. We were not on our game that day.
I don't know. I liked it.
Well, it was fun. It just, it doesn't help that we were not in the same place. We do better when we're actually face-to-face because we like on FaceTime and it's not as...
It's hard. And I feel like you and I are the same way.
Oh, for sure. It's way easier.
I think we riff a lot better in person.
Yeah.
Which is hard when you are states apart, but it's fine. You look hyper-focused.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out what episode it is. What is the...
Oh, it's definitely still up. I think it's episode 2.
Yeah, it is too. Because it's a very moshy sandwich is what I named it. Because his podcast is called Idiot Sandwich. And we talked about his moshing injuries and mine.
That was a good episode.
Yeah.
Anyway, this is I'm Not Okay, I podcast.
I'm Stormy.
I'm Elena. We're talking to Cam Smith in a couple minutes here.
Yeah, but first we're going to do new music.
Hey! We're finally getting our groove down.
Somehow.
Somehow we forget to do just about everything every single time
we forget
record.
To do the intro literally every time. Time.
And it's like it's a toss-up if we get anything else in the right order.
Well, nothing else has to be in a certain order, but we should probably do the intro at the beginning. Okay.
Nonsense.
So, this week, I'm going to do the albums first. The Used dropped Heartwork. And Hayley Williams dropped Petals for Armor 2.
Can I go back to the Used real quick? Did you hear about the controversy there?
No.
So they used tarot card drawings for their music video and artwork and everything. And they had done this little contest with their fans to get people to submit tarot cards for whatever. Like, they didn't specify the purpose. They didn't specify that they were going to be used. It just sounded like they were, you know, taking submissions for fan art for like a competition or something. There was no fine print. Nothing. And then all of these people like open up the video and the album cover and everything to see their artwork being used without a single cent going to them.
Ooh.
Yeah.
That's iffy.
Yeah. So I don't actually know what's going on there. Like, I don't know if they've responded to it yet.
Yeah. They definitely should have said this is for a music video and we're not going to pay you. Because, like, if you submit something and know that's what it's for, it's one thing. But if you submit something just like, oh, here's my artwork. Or, like, maybe they were having a contest and they were like, okay, well, the winner's going to do this for us.
Right.
Or, like, album art or something. But then just to, yeah, that seems sketchy.
Just a little sketchy. So that's my fun fact of the week.
Okay. Well, the album's good, so.
It is, yeah. All right. Anyway, sorry.
No, you're fine.
Haley Williams,
Pedals for Armor 2. And then there were a lot of singles that I liked this week. Most of them are not actually pop punk, but I'm going to say them anyway. Youngblood dropped Weird. Grandson dropped a new single called How About Now with Femme. Halsey dropped a new single with Kelsey Ballerini. I don't know if that's how you say it. It sounds wrong.
I don't know how to say
Ballerini.
It. She was big like a couple years ago.
I don't know. She's in this song. It's called The Other Girl. I have no idea how to say her name, but Ballerini just sounds wrong, but that's how it's spelled.
I think it's Ballerini. Yeah, but she's a country singer.
Okay, weird.
I say she's big, or she was big a couple years ago. Like, I actually have, like, followed her since. She may still be huge, but I don't listen to country music, so I don't know. I remember seeing one of her music videos a couple years ago.
Gotcha. Scotty Sire dropped a song called Samurai. Goody Grace dropped a song called If I Want To. Knucklepuck dropped a single called RSVP. And Adjust the Sails dropped a single called Mike Walton.
So good.
Go check all of those out. They will be in our playlist.
All right, so I got two albums this week.
Okay.
Mojo Bozo's Electric Circus, who I've talked about a couple times on here so far, released their album, which is called Germ City. And Picturesque dropped an album called Do You Feel Okay? And it's super, super good. And then, on the singles, The Killers released a new song. And it's called Fire and Bone. And it's like a crossover between their Day and Age album and Wonderful Wonderful, and I just love it. It's like, it's way more funky than they usually do, though.
Mm-hmm.
And then Paris released two singles, which are Give Me a Minute and Dead Weight. Point North released, actually this was last week, but it was right after it might have been the same day that we recorded the podcast, so we didn't get it down for new music, but Point North released a single called A Million Pieces. Gopher Gold released a single called Tone. Actually, have you listened to them before?
Yeah, I actually have that song on my playlist. I just didn't say
it. Sweet. I love them. I was going to say you'd really like them.
Ooh, also, I just want to say this. Paps released a song called Hell, and it's really good, too.
Sweet.
I forgot to put it on my written down list.
When the Sun Sets released a song called Ceiling. Dear Youth released a song called Dandelions. And Royals released a song called Out of Reach.
Perfect.
Hey. That was more concise than I may have only to do usually.
Yeah, well, people aren't here for reviews, just our recommendations, so I try not to talk about the music too much.
We dive into that when we're talking to Cam.
Yeah.
You guys, there used to be a point where we actually sat down and dissected these songs.
And it's not fun to listen to. It's just not.
It's fun to do. It is not fun to listen to.
No, unless you're in the conversation, it's not that fun.
No. Or, like, listening to somebody that actually, like, wrote the songs. That's fun.
Yeah. Yeah, well, and here's the thing. I don't like that because I have this weird belief about music, and it's that if a song means something to you, it shouldn't matter what it was written about because it can mean different things to different people. And I think that the beauty of art and music especially is that you can interpret it however you want.
Yeah, and I totally get that, but sometimes I just want to know what the background is.
That's fair.
Trash Bat. That is still killing me.
Yeah, I don't think it means anything. I think it just rhymed.
I think so. Anyway, let's cut this short and jump into our call with Cam. Okay?
Sounds good.
Left because she wanted to have children, but I still wanted to be a kid. And I don't think I'm going to change anytime soon. I hope that my son some things in common, so we can talk often and we'll share it all. I hope that my son and I will have some things in common.
All right, Cam, how are you keeping yourself happy during this whole pandemic thing?
So in my company that I work for, the shell company is called Random Camper, and it's because I renovated a vintage RV camper and turned it into an office, and I sit out here and I write all day. So I didn't realize how, like, useless I was to society until there was a quarantine and my life didn't change at all.
Like, stop it, though.
I still just see my RV all day and write. So there's been, like, zero change. I mean, it's, other than, like, the only thing that's different is trying to keep up on the news. And, like, I'm a person of faith, so, like, trying to see where the needs are and keep that in prayer. And then also see where the places I can help. I mean, the only real negative is that, like, I do freelance writing for a living. And literally all of my clients dropped.
Oh, that's awful.
Because they're like, we can't, we're not going into production in May, so we don't need script editing or anything. So that's been rough. That I don't have any money to my name right now, but also that's where everyone's at, you know?
Right.
We're all sharing that one part.
And I will say, like, I don't think you can say that you're useless to society when you've got hundreds of thousands of people that are streaming your music. And I imagine even more so right now.
That's just when someone gets burned out on Levi the Poet and Flat Sound, then they listen to a little bit of Hotel Books.
Oh, stop it. Do not undersell yourself.
When people are done with Listener and Hobo Johnson, then they go ahead and listen to some Hotel Books.
What are you listening to right now? What are your favorite bands?
I only listen to like 5 bands. I listen to mostly audiobooks and podcasts and stuff.
I love it.
Weezer has a new album coming out next month, and it's sounds like Weezer, except they added a bunch of like 80s metal riffs. So I've just been listening to a lot of Weezer getting ready for that album. And then I've been listening to this like Christian punk rock band called MXPX.
Yeah, we've heard of them.
I listen to them a lot, and been kind of going through a little bit of a Beatles. Paul McCartney was just on a Howard Stern last week, and that kind of reignited my love of the Beatles.
I have that phase like once a month where I'm just like, I'm going to listen to Beatles for a week and nobody can stop me. So
yeah,
I get that for sure.
And then you listen to Beatles. It's the thing with the Beatles is there's always going to be a song that either I've never heard or I just don't remember. And then I can like dive into it.
Yeah. There's just so much of it. But
I listen to a lot of like 60s and 70s rock. I listen to a lot of punk rock. And then I listen to a lot of like pop. And all three of those eventually lead me to just listening to the Beach Boys.
Oh, and my God. That's yes. My
fair enough. I don't know if it's like being raised in California. You're just like if you're born in California, the Beach Boys are the greatest band of all time and Black Flag's the greatest punk band. Like when I started touring, I found out that not everyone else knows a bunch of Social Distortion songs. Not everyone else knows 10 Sublime songs.
So you're touring with some lame people, it turns out.
A lot of Beastie Boys. I listen to a lot of Beastie Boys.
Oh, yeah. I will say I listen to probably more Beach Boys than anybody in my friend group for sure, but definitely our generation because that was one of my dad's favorite bands. So we're just all about the Beach Boys always. So
did he ever venture into like the Jimmy Buffett? Like the white trash side of surf rock, because that's it's really interesting.
It is really good.
Where they just have a whole song
like rockabilly now, but we did listen to some Jimmy Buffett every once in a while.
Yeah, I like Jimmy Buffett because he just writes a whole song about eating a cheeseburger, and it's stupid. You can say it's dumb, but it's about eating a cheeseburger and near the beach. And if there's anything that I would want to aspire to be in life, it's someone who gets to eat cheeseburgers on the beach. So if anything,
it's
the most relatable song ever written.
For sure.
So I want to hear a little bit about the audiobooks and the podcasts. What are your recommendations there?
Okay. Well, no one, I get my audience on Twitter, I think they're younger than me and they listen to like different stuff than me. So they always make fun of the stuff that's because apparently I listen to old people stuff. But,
we'll be the judge of that.
So Norm Macdonald put out an audiobook that's supposed to be a memoir, but it's actually completely fictional. He just made up a total fake life story.
That's amazing.
So I had to listen to it, and it's just ridiculous. He talks about growing up with like his radio host sidekick, who's like 30 years younger than him, who obviously he didn't grow up with. So I just listened to that. I was listening to, so Duncan Trussell is the stand-up comedian who has a podcast, and I don't really know his podcast super well, but he did an episode with Dr. Drew, who I think is just a national treasure.
Yeah, agreed.
I've never loved someone more who I disagree with that often. He's like, I'm going to be a doctor and a celebrity. Like, it just makes no sense. But Netflix today put out a cartoon made by Pendleton Ward, the guy who made Adventure Time.
Yeah.
And the cartoon is these absurd universes that Duncan Trussell's traveling through. But the conversations he's having are actual just recordings from his podcast. So, like, in the first episode, he's in a zombie apocalypse interviewing the president, talking about psychoactive drugs and marijuana use. But it's actually just the audio from him interviewing Dr. Drew on his podcast.
That's amazing.
That's awesome.
And I feel like I'm going to watch that whole season probably in the next couple days. So that's where I'm at right now.
How is that old people stuff?
Oh,
that sounds like, amazing to me.
All right, I just listened to the guitarist of Korn had a book that I read as a young man, and I just went ahead and read it again, or listened to it rather. He's the guy who became a Christian and then left Korn and then came back into Korn and is a Christian but plays Korn song. I don't know. It just seemed interesting.
Yeah, yeah. That whole story is very interesting to me.
Yeah,
I'm not familiar with it, honestly.
His testimony is crazy.
I read both books and I still don't get it. Like,
it doesn't make any sense.
It's lost on me. Like, I just know I'm a fan.
I gotta look into that.
For sure.
And some David Sedaris made its way on here. I guess that's more old people. I like that there's a crossword puzzle book. I don't understand how that would be an audio production. So I'm tempted to buy it.
I kind of am too, because
I don't understand how a crossword puzzle could be audio only.
Is it a crossword that you can only do in your imagination, maybe? So they read you the crossword puzzle and then you just have to answer the. But how do you.
Hard.
If that's what it is, that's awesome. If that's not what it is, I'm going to make that.
You might be onto something, because, like, you can help blind people do crossword puzzles. I mean, it's like, a public service, really.
It's like when you're doing math in your head, like trying to split a bill or something. You're trying to picture yourself carrying the two up in the corner and you just feel stupid. Like, I can't divide by four in my head.
I'm not good at mental math at all. So I imagine it'd be the same way.
I know every single word to every Skillet song, and I can't remember how to do division.
I relate to that on a spiritual level. Oh my god.
God. I'm just curious. I need to look that up now.
All right,
Cam, how did hotel books originate? Like, how did you find yourself doing what you're doing now?
Well, I was in hardcore bands and punk bands, and like nobody wanted to start like a hardcore band or a punk band. Where I lived, it was all metalcore.
Yeah.
So I was like playing bass in metalcore bands and I just sucked. Like, I wasn't contributing to the band, but I was really good at doing the talking in between songs.
I see that.
It was just terrible stage presence. I didn't know how to like do the metalcore performance. I was just bad at it. And so I was like, well, I want to do talking. And then a friend of mine's like, you should do public speaking. And I was like, I was like 19 or whatever. I was like, or maybe I might've been like 16. I was like, what do I have to talk? Like, no one wants to hear me get up on stage and do a TED talk. And I knew that I wanted more life experience before doing something like that. And then, my writing partner now, who was my writing partner then. So I think we're up to 12 years of being writing partners. He's the behind the scenes guy. He was like, well, what do you want to do? And I said, my dream would be to be in a band like Black Flag. But that economy doesn't exist anymore. And I go, like, the punk, that version of hardcore punk is gone. Or at least it's gone the way that I would want to do it. I don't feel like I'm the guy qualified to do it. And he's like, well, what did Henry Rollins do next after Black Flag? And I said, he did spoken word. And he's like, well, do that. And then I wrote a poem and I put it on the internet. And my friend Teddy played in a metalcore band. And he was like, hey, we're playing a show next weekend. Why don't you memorize a couple of your poems and, like, come do them right before we go on stage? So early on, I was able to get really good shows for a no-namer because I would just let the band set up their gear behind me while I was performing. And then I was like, this is cool. I'm going to kind of get my name out there, and then I'm going to start a punk band. And then by the time that I was ready to start a punk band, Hotel Books had already kind of gotten its name, and we'd already kind of started. Like at first, it was just me doing poetry. Then I chose the name Hotel Books. And then it was like, okay, this is a thing that I can do. Like, why start a punk band? Why put too many cooks in the kitchen when I can just keep doing this and sharing this message I believe in? And then it's funny because for about 3 years we were a full band, and I did not succeed in that environment because I just didn't know how to take something I'd built and then invite other people into it and invite new ideas. You know, like, you can't have three people holding the steering wheel at the same time. It's dangerous. And so right. I think Hotel Books formed from me just being like, I know that I like to talk, and I think people like listening, and if they don't like listening, no one will come to my shows, but that's okay. I'll still do the shows. So right. It was just kind of a matter of, even if no one likes this, I still like it, so I'll keep doing it, and I'll just pay the $100 VFW fee to rent out the room and do the show. And if the six kids show up and they all pay $10, that's pretty close to the $100. So it kind of just became that. And then I think – I remember, like, early day San Diego, people were like, oh, my gosh, every show I go to has this stupid, fat Christian poet who just ruins the show. But it was like I didn't know what else to do other than get on stage, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think there's some, like, deep-rooted brokenness in me that needs applause, and that probably fueled it in sometimes a healthy way and sometimes an unhealthy way of just – demanding instant gratification because I don't know who I am if people don't tell me that what I'm saying is good or bad. So I think that was built into it, which gave me the opportunity to just fail on stage, which was it's like a stand-up comedian. Like, you have to say jokes and no one laughs for you to know the joke's not ready. Right. So I would up and do some poems and people like, that was really good. And then they'd hate the next one. And I'd go, okay, there's something wrong with that poem because they liked the first one. So they don't hate me. Sometimes people just hate me, or they're like, I came here to mosh to Sleeping Giant. Why is this guy talking? You know, I came here to see whatever metal band. So if they hate me, that I can't do anything about that. But if they like me and hate my poems, I can fix that because that's a muscle I can work out. So that's kind of how it started. And then by the time I was like, I don't want to do spoken word anymore. I want to be in a band, or I want to do something outside of music. It was like, five people were paying their bills off Hotel Books, none of them were me. So those people convinced me to keep doing it.
Do you still circulate any of those early poems that you were performing?
Yeah. Yeah.
Which ones are they?
We do a poem called So Fond Of. That was on our first demo. We did it at, what's it called? Little Elephant, which is like this real, man, that place is cool. It's like this, they do like those live sessions, like Audio Tree. Mm-hmm. But what makes them, in my opinion, different is they do it in like broad daylight. So you're in their house, but there's no mood. You're just in their living room playing broad daylight. So it's like you have to, it's totally reliant upon yourself to create the mood because there's no audience.
That's so neat.
So that I was like, I told my band, I'm like, hey guys, I know we just spent forever crafting this new album. Please let me do one old poem in this environment because I want to see. And I had laryngitis when I did it. And they're like, you can come back later. And I was like, I really want to do this with laryngitis. Like, I really want that to be my legacy to this audience because I want my band. First off, I wanted people to see how cool my band was without my voice throughout every song because I was very proud of how my band sounded and how, you know, their talent without me. But also because I just needed to prove to myself that I could create an atmosphere in a living room setting. In broad daylight. And that those little elephant, the guys who run it, are just like the most passionate music fans in the world. So they're like telling you how to succeed in that environment while you're doing it. So that helped a lot too. So that once I did that session, then we were in the van. We're like, let's just do the old poems throughout our set. So if you come see Hotel Books live and it's a full band, which we still do every once in a while, it'll be like three or four Hotel Book songs. And then just kind of like an improvised mess for about 20 minutes of just us jamming and playing songs however long we want to play them, and me improvising lyrics, and then we'll end on a hotel book song.
That sounds really cool.
Yeah. So it's kind of a mess. That's why we don't really tour a lot, and that's also why we don't get offered to open for bigger bands, because our set is like, if we play for an hour, 35 minutes is just me talking with a guitar behind me, you know?
Yeah, but I'd go to, like, see you headlining for that. That's so cool. And it's not something that you see done ever. I mean, it's rare that bands even deviate from their set lists nowadays.
I think that would go over really well in, like, a jam band setting, too. Like, if you're playing with other...
We stole the concept from church. Like you think about, like, a church that has a really polished band. It's not like they're rehearsing 10 times a week. It's just that they trust each other enough to like, when the youth pastor or whoever's singing takes it down, everyone goes down with him. And if he wants to repeat the chorus 10 times, everyone follows. And that chemistry was so appealing to us. So when I first hired the Hotel Books backing band, we purposely looked for people who grew up playing in church.
Yeah.
Because that's basically the same skill set, is we're going to play these same four chords for 10 minutes, and you have to find a way to keep it interesting. And that I think is only raised, like, we had this drummer named Justin who was like a gospel drummer, and he would like, I would just look at him and I could just, with our eyes, he'd know that I want him to build or take it down and stuff. So like, that was the most exciting part about being a full band, I think, for me, was the like unpredictability of our set and knowing that we were the only band who could do that, you know?
Yeah. Well, and coming from, cause I mean, I grew up in church, and I mean, I went to Catholic church until I was like, oh God, like 12. And then we were in a non-denominational church. My dad plays in the church band over there. My brother plays at his own church now. So it's seeing a really, really good church band is like one of the coolest things anybody can ever see. Cause they're so together and they just flow well together. And that is honestly real cool musicianship. So it's really cool that you found that in your band, for sure.
Well, I was one of those kids who was just bored at church, like just bored.
Mm-hmm.
And then my church moved to a bigger building, and that created more opportunity, and that brought more people from the community into the church. So then the band got way better, because we went from having 300 people to 1,000. So we had more talented musicians walking in the door, and then church got fun. And it was like, okay, if I survive these 30 minutes of music, that, like, if I can get through that, that's the part I like. Then I don't mind having to listen to the sermon that I, like, I just was a kid who didn't sit still well. And also a kid who, like, my Christianity as a child was so stolen from my parents. Like none of it was my own thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
It was just, like, you brush your teeth every night, you go to bed on time, you do your homework, and you believe in God. Like, those were the rules in my house. So that my faith in God as a child, there was nothing authentic or honest about it. It was just something I was taught to do. And then I got very good at performing, and I was like, well, I want to perform for God because I love God and I'm taught to love God. And it was through that where I was realized, like, okay, if this is Christianity, I can get into this. And then I had some tragedy in my life early on where I just had desperation and found God in a real way, and now it's different. But yeah, it's interesting, because I think a lot of people who are really good musicians are atheists who grew up in a church where the only reason they kept going was because the music was fun, you know?
Right.
And but they never actually, because like when I accepted Jesus as a kid, it meant nothing, you know? It was just like the rules. Like, oh, all my friends believe in Jesus. My parents believe in Jesus. If I want to thrive in the kennel I was put in, you know, I need to believe in Jesus, and I need to love DC Talk and Newsboys, and I need to watch, you know, Bible Man and VeggieTales, and that's what I do. So I think I chose to do those things out of the utility of not being emotionally cast out of my environment, not because I was in love with God. So then through that, though that's sad, it gave me a way to connect with the actual linguistics of a sermon rather than the meaning. And I think that's part of what shaped me into wanting to write words with a meaning behind them, I guess. Sorry, this is, anyone listening to this is probably like, wow, this is just real in the weeds now.
No, I'm actually super interested, because I relate to that in a very real way. So it's, I mean, and since we're on this topic right now, there are several songs in I'll Leave the Light On Just in Case that I definitely connected with because I felt that what you were just talking about kind of in the lyrics and
thank you.
Even in the music. And I related to that album specifically because I was like, wow, I have actually legitimately been through this and experienced this.
Yeah.
So it's just, I really connected with it a lot.
Thank you. Yeah, so, no one really knows that album. That's my favorite one, though.
I love it. It's my favorite, too.
I was doing an interview in the probably a couple years ago. It was with another band, and the band's like, it's impossible to pick a favorite song or a favorite album of your own because I made that record. It's like, yeah, but this is my favorite. Like, that and I think, like, the Hotel Books audience hates it, but people who hate Hotel Books love it. It's very odd. Like, people who have never given Hotel Books a chance are like, that's the one album I listen to. And then people who love Hotel Books are like, this is so bad. It sounds like Kanye West.
No, what? I disagree with that, but I think me
too. Auto-tuned. We use the chipmunk voice too much, everyone says, which I thought we should have used it more.
Do you feel like you feel so strongly about that album because of the production, or do you relate to the songs more because they're fresher?
No, because we've put out an album since then.
Yeah, that's true.
Equivalency 2.
Yeah,
and Equivalency 2. I like 2. Equivalency 2. I like Equivalency 1 a lot. But I'll leave that on just in case. Jonathan and I recorded it on our own, and then we just went into the studio for 2.5 days just to clean it up. But we actually rented an Airbnb off Lake Erie and then a second Airbnb in downtown Toledo. So we did the first half of the record during a storm, and Lake Erie was literally like slamming against our walls.
Oh, like, my God.
No footage of it. Like, we tell people how scary it was, and like, it couldn't have been that bad, but we videoed it so we can prove how scary it was. And then the second half was recorded in this like isolated part of downtown where it's all where the railroad tracks are, so you can't walk anywhere, there's nothing to do. And so Jonathan and I just built the record ourselves. Then we went on tour, and we had 5 days off on the tour, and we spent 2 of those days in the studio where we do all the Hotel Books records, and cleaned up the record and redid some vocals, redid some acoustic guitar, stuff that we couldn't get in the room noise. So I think part of it is because Jonathan and I literally just spent a month doing nothing but writing an album and literally nothing else. And like, this was like, we'd wake up at like 8, we'd start writing a song, we'd record the song while we're writing it. And then at like midnight, we'd stop and we'd watch. And this was right before the reunion of Jersey Shore was coming on.
Okay.
We were watching through the first seasons of Jersey Shore, so that way we'd be caught up for the reunion. So every night we'd watch like 5 or 6 episodes of Jersey Shore and then sleep for a few hours. And it was just me, Jonathan, and my girlfriend who was filming the whole thing. And the Jonathan's girlfriend also came for a few days. And that was our whole process, was like, let's just write music. And then let's watch Jersey Shore. And then we ended up at one point buying skateboards, and we'd go skateboard around the block and talk about the mixes. And we were just living our lives from junior high.
That's amazing. That sounds awesome.
We spent like $100 on candy. So we're just eating candy and watching Jersey Shore and skateboarding, and we wrote a record. So I think part of why that record came out. So I thought it was like, I remember I sent it over to Landon from The Plot and You, who's he's the only human being that I think that I know very personally who I'd say is a genius. And so I said, I need you to listen to this record. And I said, it's the first Hotel Books record that's actually kind of happy and catchy. And he texted me like a day later, and he's like, this is like offensive how sad this album is.
Oh my God.
He's like, this is like kind of torture.
You're like, and I thought it was happy. Like,
no, it's all about like childhood, and it's about missing skateboarding and listening to Jersey Shore. And like, there's a line about how I miss being afraid of marijuana. Like, I miss being innocent. And he's like, yeah. No one wants to face those thoughts.
Well, I just proved him wrong, because apparently I did, because I loved it.
Well, thank you.
Not going to lie, I did cry the first time, but I loved every second of it.
I appreciate that. It's very kind. Yeah, we had fun making that record. I think the recording process and the bond Jonathan and I built through recording it, and the mental breakdowns and breakthroughs that came with that record. I mean, if you listen to, like, there's one song, and it's like Alan Watts talking, and it's talking about how there was a man in a crevasse by the lake, and they went to talk to him. And when they got there, the man disappeared, and they said, "Where'd you go?" And he said, "Oh, I jumped into the water." And they go, "We didn't see you." And he goes, "Oh, it's because I became one with the water." And it's like, so that's playing. And in the background, I'm auto-tuned singing. Uh-huh. And for that whole, like, 18 minutes of the record where we go from there to the part four, the only lyrics I'm singing are the lyrics to "This Little Light of Mine" and then the Ohio State song.
Yeah.
Like, the state anthem of Ohio, which I'm not from Ohio. We just recorded the album in Ohio. So if you listen closely, I'm literally, like, singing about the Golden Hills of Ohio, which they don't have any Golden Hills in Ohio. I've been there many times. There's nothing. And
it's then pretty flat. Yeah.
So when we turned the record in, we were like, there's no way this is going to ever be heard by real humans. Like, we're going to – there's no way this will come. They're like, we're literally singing "This Little Light of Mine" for 5 minutes. There's no way this is going to be heard. And then the
Where
label –
Where did that come from, though? Why did you – Why?
Because I just want, I was thinking of childhood.
Okay.
And I was telling this story about how, like, one of my first memories as a kid was with my mom. She was, there was this thing called MOPS, which is Mothers of Preschoolers. And it's like this Christian moms club. It's like for moms who want to hang out but not jazzercise. And yeah. I remember they'd give us these little, like, lights and then these baskets. And we'd be like, "This little light." And we'd sing it. And then we'd put the basket on top and then go, "No," and pull it off and all that. And yeah. I was telling Jonathan how that was, like, my first memory of realizing, like, the length that like, people go to raise me. Of, like, how fun was that? You know, they bought – I was like, some church – in a storage unit has like 100 little baskets just for one song. Like, that's cool to me. Right. So then we put that on the record. And what made that record, I think, even more crazy was we put it out with no promotion because we were just like, let's just release it without an expectation. We put it out on Valentine's Day, played it for my mom, and she really liked it. And I played the song "Your Voice" and "There Is," and then I played the whole, like, four part or a thing at the end. And then the next day she went to a coma and died, like, just out of nowhere. Like, she was healthy and then she wasn't. And it was my birthday.
God.
So we kept her alive until the 18th so she wouldn't pass away on my birthday or my cousin's birthday. So my, like, last memories with my mom, not to get so sad, but, like, it's easy to talk about now because I've told the story on other shows.
Right.
And also, I'm kind of more in a celebrating her life phase than mourning her death phase. But she painted the ceiling to this RV, and then I showed her my album that had come out, and that was, like, my last memory with her. And that record had this little – sorry, I'm only telling this depressing story.
That's the record that has the one song where you talk about funerals on it, though, isn't it?
Yeah, my dad has never heard that album. My mom's fiance has never heard the album because while – I was in the hospital canceling all the press for that album. And people were like, I got yelled at by a podcast. I'm like, I can't do the show. I'm in the hospital. My mom's dying. They're like, you don't understand how big of a deal it is that you even, like, it was just like, so I was like, and you know, when you're in trauma, you're like, everyone's turning on me, which really five people turned on. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that whole record, you know, there's a song called "Death is a Terrifying Thing." And it's about like the whole record's about, like, again, like the innocence. A part of the innocence of that record is, let's write a record about a time before we really understood what death was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, my family has never heard that record because my mom died right when they would have listened to it. And I told them all, like, well, if you knew what it was about, you wouldn't like it, you know?
Yeah. It's incredible to me that you still hold it so close, though, because I feel like a lot of people, if they had those memories associated with something like that, would not be able to listen back. And I think that just really speaks to, like, first of all, like, how emotionally mature you are, and then just how dare you hold your music. I love it.
I think I'm not – I wouldn't say I'm emotionally mature. I think, like
– You don't think so?
I'm one of those people who's not good at a lot of things. So the things I am good at, I just got really good at. Like, I can't throw a ball. You know what I mean? Like
right.
I can't do anything that, like growing up, I was the kid who learned how to be funny. Like – I used to do a bit in my stand-up where I would say, if you suck at ping pong, the best thing you could do is get really good at making fun of people who are good at ping pong. That was, you know, like me. I learned how to be, like, funny rather than good at stuff. So when I started Hotel Books, it was all about suicide prevention. And like overnight, I was getting messages of people going, hey, my son, you were his favorite band. Tonight he died. And so I just had to overnight get used to that. And then also my parents gave me a weird gift in life, which is when I was growing up, they were in the nursing home business. So we were in the business of people in their last phase of life. So I'd go to the nursing homes and visit people. And then 6 months later, those people would pass on. And then, one of the suicide prevention companies we work with, the founder of it, committed suicide like 6 months after my mom passed away. So I think I wouldn't say I'm emotionally mature. I'd say I'm an emotional wreck, but I've accepted that, that death is inevitable. And it's easy to say that when someone dies young, that was unexpected or whatever, but to expect anything from death or life, to have expectation means you're already operating off of a faulty mindset. So once I learned that, I'm still a mess everywhere else in that life, but I've just been able to, I actually just recorded, I'm putting up a radio show of my own on Eloquilt. And we just talked last night about how, like, we're talking about Fred Rogers, Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Bob Ross, because I'm obsessed with my childhood. And I was talking about how what I loved about them was they provided hope. And Fred Rogers provided hope because he would take what he learned and share it with us. Bob Ross provided hope because while he was dealing with tragedy in his life, he still continued to paint. There's a season of Joy of Painting that's I can't watch. I get emotional. I get more emotional talking about that than I am about the other stuff. His wife unexpectedly passed away. And there's a season of Joy of Painting where he's like 2 months out from his wife passing away, and he's still getting up there every week. And at the time, he's getting up there for a couple hundred people. You know, now we think of Bob Ross as the celebrity, but he was just a public access show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he would get up and paint because he wanted – there's a part where he's like, we're going to do a nighttime painting. It's going to be dark. But life has dark times and life has good times. And then he just starts painting. He goes, I'm waiting for the good times right now.
Oh.
And it's like – and if you know that his wife just died and then his son would fill in randomly – and it's like, this is a guy whose mother just passed away, and he's just getting up here and doing the show because he knows that his dad's fan. So I learned a lot from that. I learned a lot. But what I also learned from that is that two men, two beautiful, beautiful men were Fred Rogers and Bob Ross, and they both died unexpectedly from, like, illness.
Mm-hmm.
And the breakthrough I had that if you want to hear me talk about this for hours, or it'll be on my radio show that comes out next week. What I found out was death is completely unfair and it's absurd and it's stupid. However, life is unfair, and the gift we've been given to make life even more unfair than death is that we've been given the gift to give each other grace and forgiveness and mercy. And in our ability to give people grace and our ability to forgive each other, even when we don't want to, mm-hmm. we're tipping the scale and making life even more unfair. Like, there's that old Reliant K lyric where they say the beauty of grace is that it makes life unfair. And that's kind of where, like our ability to say, hey, you hurt me, but I'm still going to love you, is so much more unfair than someone dying of cancer. And so the fact that we can almost, like, combat the unfairness of death and the negativity of death with the unfairness of grace and the positivity of forgiveness, I think makes it all worth it. Because if, like, I'd rather this than everyone live forever with no forgiveness, you know?
Yeah, I love that.
Wow, I love that.
Did you want to talk about your new business for a little bit?
Yeah, the company that I published through Random Camper, they put together, or we put together, Eloquilt.com, Eloquilt.com. And it's like a subscription platform. And I got a bunch of my friends, and I said, who I think have, like, amazing stories. And I was like, let's write stories and let's put them on this platform and let's put out a new chapter of each story each month. Because I have friends, like, I have a friend who asked me to help him write a book. And the book was an amazing book, but it was 80 pages. And I was like, we can't get a publisher to put out an adult book for 80 pages. There's no way to price point that. No one's going to know what it is. And he's like, well, let's just make it 250 pages. I'm like, but it's perfect at 80. And if we make it 250, it's not going to be perfect. It's going to be bloated. So then I was like, what could I create where we can make compelling stories for adults that are 80 pages? So it's like, all right, let's cut this into 8 10-page chapters. Instead of writing it down, let's have you narrate it, and let's put them out as 10-minute episodes of audio. And at the time, the idea was people love podcasts, and podcasts are, I mean, they're huge right now. However, there's people who are like Joe Rogan fans who are like, I love Joe Rogan, but on the drive over, I can only listen to 15 minutes, and then on the drive home, I have to start over because I don't remember what they were talking about. So I was like, what if we just make a platform where everything's 15 minutes? And then we put out a new chapter each month. And then we're like, it'll be perfect. We'll market it to people who travel a lot, and we'll put it out in April. And then when the quarantine happened, right? Cool.
Go figure.
So no one travels, no one has money. And a lot of people think it's not what it is. A lot of people thought like, cool, I'm going to join. I can't wait to upload my stuff. It's like, no, you don't upload stuff. It's like Netflix. You just download. You just enjoy. But some of the stories are written by me. Most is edited by me, and some are written by my friends who have been through life experiences that I think are worth giving others an opportunity to relate to. And that's kind of what it is. It's just a platform for people like, I want short, digestible stories that I can relate to. So like each series, when you log in, there's a bunch of audiobook covers, and you click on one, and there's a first chapter of each book. And then through the month of May, we're going to slowly release the second chapter of each book. So, like, there's 24 series. So through the month of May, basically every 2 or 3 days, there will be a new chapter of something coming. So we're trying to make it where there's constantly something new. Because early hotel books, I think part of why we found success was we'd put out these, like, 2 or 3 song EPs. We put them all out on one record called Everything We Should Have Done Differently. But a lot of my friends are like, why do you do that? But it's like if you put out 2 or 3 songs every 6 months, that gives people plenty of time to memorize every word and really connect with the songs. Where if you put out a record with 12 songs, people are going to pick their favorite 5. And, you know, so I thought, so with Eloquilt, it's like I want to meet people where they're at, and I want to give them something on a timeline that's digestible. And at the same time, writing 10 pages a month so they can do it without the pressure of I have to write this perfect or a publisher or an editor is going to tear me apart. There's no top brass. There's no corporation that's going to sway anything here. You know, there's the person in charge is my writing partner, and he's not censoring people. And then we have a faith and recovery addition to it as well that comes with it, and that's stories of recovery. One of our people, he writes about being a heroin addict, and then now he's a drug counselor, and just kind of what goes into becoming a heroin addict and what goes into getting sober and what goes into handling relapse and stuff. So there's stuff on there that's designed to be a resource, and there's stuff on there that's just designed to be entertainment. You know, at the end of the day, like, we want to help people, but at the same time, like, we also just want to entertain people, you know?
Yeah. That's awesome.
So that's what it is.
Yeah. Super excited about it.
I wish there was a shorter way to describe it.
No, that sounds super cool, especially for, because I mean, my commute is not very long. Like, I live in a not very big city, so like I drive for 10 minutes, so that would be perfect for like a commute listen for me, because if I try to listen to podcasts on my commute, it gets cut off right at the beginning.
Yeah,
so
there's a chapter on there that's just a guy it's a series, and one of the chapters is a guy talking about the first 3 times he went to Steak and Shake, and it's just this a really dumb, stupid story with no point to it at all. It's just to make people smile. So we kind of try to create an umbrella where there's a lot of different vibes to it and a lot of different genres. However, what unites it is it's all written for the same type of person. It's all written for young people who are trying to explore themselves and explore the world. So, yeah, I mean, that's basically what I'm writing now. But like I said before the podcast, to everyone listening, does not mean that Hotel Books is done.
Very important. Hotel Books is still a thing.
Hotel Books is very active. We're the most active band during the quarantine. That's probably not true, but
but the tour was only canceled because of extenuating circumstances.
Literally, I get a DM. The kid guy goes, "Ever since you started your company, you don't care about hotel books. You even canceled your tour." I was like, "The CDC canceled my tour."
I'm not happy about it.
Common Sense canceled my tour. But yeah, I talked to Jonathan a few weeks ago, and we hadn't talked in a while, and we talked about maybe it's time to write a hotel book song again. But he's in Ohio, so it's not the best time for hotel books to write music, just because we'd rather do it in person. The guy who wrote all the music on I'll Leave Light On Just In Case, he has his own band now, and where he does the singing and all the music, he does everything, and it's really good. It's called Sonos. Okay. And on Twitter, if you go to I Am Sonos. Sounds
familiar, but I don't know that I've heard them.
I tweeted about it a few times, but if you go to Twitter/I Am Sonos, that's his own thing. That's like, it's not like a side project. It's like his heart and soul. So you should check that out too. But yeah, he and I talked not too long ago about maybe it's time to do a hotel book song, but we'll see.
Well, here's hoping for it. So
yeah.
This question's a little ill-timed, just because obviously nothing is going on right now, but what's the music scene like around you, where you're from?
I have no idea, because I go to Ohio for everything.
That's fair.
Yeah, okay.
Cool.
Like, I stay with him. If we go to, like, a big show, it would be, like, Detroit. But over here, I'm sure the music scene's doing well. I'm just not a part of it. But I'm also, like, I'm just not a musician. Like, I just don't.
Right? That's fair.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, like, I don't know how to play music. And, like, I go to L.A. If I go to a show, it's going to be, like, Chain Reaction or like it's L.A. or Southern California for the most part, because that's – when I go to shows, it's also an opportunity to see friends who live far away. So
right.
And that scene, from what I understand, is doing really well. I know that right now, these last couple years have been incredible down there, because Chain Reaction was where the band Movements kind of started. So it's gotten a ton of young kids starting bands that are different than the metalcore thing, which, like, I love the metalcore stuff too, but, like, it's cool to see kids who are like, oh my gosh, a band who does rock got big here. And Movements, right. Even not just rock, they do, like, spoken word and stuff too, you know?
Oh yeah.
Right now that scene seems to be doing really good, but I only know it from the outside looking in.
Gotcha. Cool.
When I was a kid, the scene here was all hardcore bands, and it made me so jealous because I wanted to be in one, but all my friends wanted to play metalcore. But, like, we used to have a really big scene fight. Like, do you guys know the band, like, Ceremony?
Yeah.
Or I feel like Defeater was really big here when I was coming up.
Oh, for sure.
Like, a lot of New York bands and Boston bands really big here. I think Terror was a pretty big band. Like, yeah, kind of like traditional hardcore and, like, kind of hybrid hardcore were really big here. And some, like, crossover bands and, like, thrash bands and stuff was what I came up with. But now I think there's a lot of metalcore now. And then in Fresno, where I grew up, there was this really cool era where there's a lot of, like, scrams bands and a lot of, like, screamo bands. But I don't know if that's still going on. That might have been a decade ago.
Sounds like, you know, yeah, 2010.
Yeah.
It
was cool.
It sounds cool. This is a kind of random question, but I like to ask it because sometimes people have some really fun stories. Do you have any, like, crazy show stories, like anything weird or funny that happened while you guys were, like, on tour or just at a show?
Yes, but the stories I always tell people say are dumb. Because
those are the best stories.
Like, last night I was doing a live stream, and my buddy Johnny Blackwell got on the live stream. He used to fill in on bass for hotel books all the time. And we were talking about how we played this festival in Stockton. So it's like 100 degrees outside. Mm-hmm. And all the bands were getting, like, fast food. And we had we had pho, like Vietnamese soup.
Yeah.
Delivered, which is not really a delivery item.
No.
And they filled it up at the top. Like, took the to-go cup and filled it up to the top with broth. And they gave us a to-go box with noodles and meat and everything. And we were like, they were mad. They didn't want us using the sink. So we had to, like, drink down the broth enough to be able to fit the other stuff in. Like, we were just in there. It was like, and I feel like all the bands were like, we're not talking to those guys. And I think we were like one of the headliners. I think we were one of the more known bands on the show. And I was like, I've never felt so stupid in my life.
Honestly, like, yeah. Though, that sounds like something I would 100% do, just because I'd be like, huh, I feel like pho tonight. Let's just do it. And then everybody's just like, why? That's not a to-go. Why are you beat that in a restaurant?
Well, and it's like, yeah, you're at a show where you're like, but I want to watch bands while I eat this. Like, I don't want to eat at a restaurant. I want to watch a beatdown band.
I want to do both things right now. It's fine. Yeah,
early hotel books, when we first started trying out as a full band, people hated it because Johnny and I would do a lot of the driving and we'd always get soup. And they're like, this is the worst food to get on the road. Like, I don't care.
I just want soup.
This is what sounds good right now. I don't know what you want me to do about it. It's
a weird phase we went through.
Like, but yeah, I mean, did it together.
I like telling those stories more. I mean, there's crazy stuff that's happened too, but like, I think the more subtle stuff is funny.
I think it's pretty funny.
One time, my favorite story to tell is our van, the caliper from the front wheel, got stuck in the tire. So when we would drive, it would make the metal grinding on metal noise. Like, just the most unbearable noise. So we were stuck at the most, like, beautiful, like, little harbor in Southern California, this beautiful ocean, trying to fix the van, and we realize it's not going to get fixed. So the bass player and the drummer are like, we'll go to the hotel. Jonathan and I will go get a tow truck, go with the van, get the van taken to a shop, and then Uber to the show. Because I had to be at the shop because it's my van. So Jonathan and I had to get the tow truck to take us to the shop, then from the shop, Uber to the show, and then play the show. Because we can play a show without a drummer and a bass player, you know?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I call the tow truck. The other guys Uber to the hotel. They just have their own night hanging out. They have the night off. The tow truck driver doesn't know how the GPS on the phone works. So you know how, like, when you go on Google Maps, it shows the map, and then you push start, and it zooms in? He didn't know that. He's just watching it before pushing start and just watching the little ball get further into the map. And I was trying to teach him how to do it. And then we get to this place where there's these canals. It's in, like, downtown LA somewhere. And these canals, you have to go over these giant humps. So we're in a tow truck with a 12-passenger van latched onto the back. We have no faith he latched it on correctly. We're going with thumbs. And every single time, the back of the van slaps the ground. And then the tow truck runs out of gas.
Oh, my God.
And the guy has a tank of gas. He doesn't know how to light road flares. And in trying to light them, he breaks them. So we had to have Jonathan stand in the road with his cell phone light on.
Oh, my God.
The guy didn't have a funnel. So I had to climb into the van and get my funnel out of the trunk of the van. But we can't open the trunk because all the gear's back there. So I had to climb over the tow truck and into the van and then to the trunk of the van. And I get our funnel. And then he's pouring the gas and it's going into the funnel, but he's not able to get the hose into the funnel and then the funnel into the truck. It's just too much for him. So I have to do it. And then Jonathan immediately is like, I'm done, dude. I'm just going to start taking pictures. Because we're like, no one's going to believe this story. So Jonathan's taking pictures. Because he's like, we have to have evidence that this happened. So the tow truck, we get the gas in, and we start going, and we're just sitting there in silence. And I'm trying to not make eye contact with Jonathan, because the tow truck guy's a great guy. He's just having a bad day. And then the tow truck guy looks and goes, oh, I get what you meant earlier. Push the start button. Yeah. So then we get back to the shop, Uber to the show, and it's a 21-up show. And there's no green room. So Jonathan, who's 20 at the time, has to just stand in front of the venue.
Oh, my God.
And then he's only allowed in the venue on stage, which is funny because one of the local bands was like, hey, what band are you in? And he goes, I'm from Hotel Books. And the guy's like, he's the bass player of a local band. He's like, I'll hang out with you. This guy's like 25, 26, totally old enough. But he's just a nice guy. He goes, you know what, Jonathan? Because I had to go sell T-shirts, so I couldn't save Jonathan. And the rest of our band, who's also underage, who could be with Jonathan, are at the hotel. So this kid named Mike is like, I'll hang out with you, Jonathan. And now, to this day, Mike's like one of my best friends. because that was like a cool thing. But we play the show. Jonathan puts his glasses, super expensive Ray-Bans, on a ledge during our set. They get stolen during our set. God. We go back and say, hey, can we look at the security camera footage? And the guy goes, only the person who owns the item is allowed to go back. And I was like, why can't I go back? They go, that's our policy. And I go, okay, well, I'll get Jonathan. And I bring Jonathan. Like, well, he can't go back. He's not 21. So, like...
okay, so I own the item now.
Yeah, so it's like, so you're just not going to help. And I really literally look at the guy, I'm like, I think you might have stolen the glasses, man. you're acting like someone who stole the glasses.
100%.
So it was like just the worst night. Then we get back to the hotel.
Crazy.
And it's some like hotel where it's all pictures. We're in Hollywood, so it's all pictures of like Marilyn Monroe and like Elvis Presley on the walls, you know. But it was literally like just the worst night. But Jonathan and I, like, whenever Jonathan and I talk, we only talk like once a month. And when we talk, that's like the first thing we talk about is like, literally had a tow truck run out of gas. Like, that's never happened to someone.
No.
There's a picture of me having to do all the work pouring the gas. And then these like, the other guy who's wearing these like gloves, who's just barely holding the bottom of the gallon, pretending like he's helping. And we were like, that awesome. Should be our next album cover.
Oh my God, it has to be.
All right, Cam, I have one more question for you. Just a little bit of a fun one. If you were to be stuck in quarantine with any artist, living or dead, who would it be?
Well, I have two answers. Because I can say the one... question. Is it so I can collaborate with them? Or so I can just interview them relentlessly? Like, would they be compliant with my demands? Because if it's just like, oh, I'm going to be sitting in my house with Paul Simon, who's just going to be watching Friends all day... then it could be anyone. I don't care. Anyone but, like, Charlie Sheen, I'm fine with, you know? But if it's, like, get to actually spend quality time with this person, I'd say Paul Simon from Simon and Garfunkel.
Good answer.
Yeah, or if it was, like, oh, so I can make a record with them or, like, write poetry or something. Maybe, like, David Lynch, the guy who made Twin Peaks or something. I don't know. Living or dead, though, I would – or, like, if I could pick a band – it would be the Beastie Boys.
Oh my God, that would be so fun.
That would be such a cool imagine,
yeah.
But all of them, living and dead, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, just to be a part of that dynamic would be real fun.
Be cool to hang out with Killer Mike. Lauryn Hill, who was amazing in Sister Act 2, but no one, because it's a sequel that she wasn't in the first one, no one gives her credit for. So it would just be like quarantined with her while me explaining how she deserved more respect for Sister Act 2. I don't know.
The whole time.
That'd be it.
That sounds like a good quarantine to me.
Yeah, then we could just sing Killing Them Softly together or whatever. Just not Charlie Sheen or someone who does a lot of drugs. Because you don't have access to drugs. They would, you know, not be good. That wouldn't be a healthy situation.
A practical consideration, yeah.
I'm not good with animals, so if it was like an artist like the dog from Beethoven, I'd not want that either.
Okay, fair enough.
Just in case, along with my dogs, I don't think I would, or any cat, I wouldn't want, not because I have a problem with cats, but you know, you get pretentious famous Hollywood cats in your house and you have kids, and I don't want that. Martin Sheen, though, that'd be cool. Martin Sheen, doors wide open. Emilio Estevez, totally fine.
And anyone from the other Sheen brothers, just not Charlie.
Yeah,
that's where we're drawing the line here.
Yeah, or like a Baldwin brother could be cool.
Fair enough. Lots of considerations here. I love it.
Yeah. Awesome. All right, Cam, I just want to say one more time, like, seriously, thank you so much for joining us and kind of, like, spending a little bit of our quarantine together. Just, like, it's so cool to me.
Yeah, it's fun.
It's really pissing me off that I cannot remember what song I'm thinking about right now. It's because I vividly remember this moment. Last year, it was in May, I was getting this tattoo done, so I was driving into Baltimore, and I was listening to this song. And I had this moment where I was like, wow, I would really love to talk to him. And I would love to get him on this podcast that we've just started. But like, We're not there yet. We haven't had any yet. I'm thinking it's got to be if it was in May, but really could have been anything. And I'm going to dive into it as soon as I'm done here and figure out what song I was listening to.
I'm pretty sure when you were driving to that tattoo is when I sent you that the I'll Leave the Light On album and was like, you have to listen to this.
I thought we talked about it in February.
I don't remember.
It's just going to be the line, I miss watching Jersey Shore, one of those lines.
Yes, what if?
I really know. I just like remembered it as being really profound.
Did you
miss it? It was a Jersey Shore.
That just gives me an excuse to return, though. Once you find that line, I can come back on and do another episode.
We'll dissect that song.
I'm rarely delighted in my own work. Typically, the second a record comes out, I'm ready to just write a book or write a screenplay or something. You know, I'm ready to just distance myself from the art form. But the one thing I delight myself in is when I put I'll Leave the Light On, the State of the Scene podcast reviewed it, and one of them loved it, the other one hated it, and was calling it, like, he basically said, like, it was, like, the worst. I think his line was, like, he's like, I did not enjoy listening to this. And I actually took, like, a minute of that. And if you listen to my new album, Equivalency 2, if you listen to the last song, the last minute of it is the State of the Scene podcast talking about how bad I'll Leave the Light On was. And I got permission to do it because I didn't want to get in trouble. But yeah, I didn't tell them what I was doing. I said, hey, do I have permission to use your voice? So if you listen to Equivalency 2, the last minute of the last track is the State of the Scene podcast just trashing I'll Leave the Light On just in case. And one guy just, with all the humility in his heart, trying to defend the album, but knowing that he can't.
How? I remember hearing that, and I was like, yeah. I wonder what that's from. Like,
that's a real review. That's an actual... Yeah, people are like, who wrote that script? And I'm like, that's a real review of my album. That was a...
Someone just said that about it.
I will have to find the review that Stormy and I did, because we ended up deleting those episodes. Wasn't the same show that we do now.
Because we're not. We're not actually. We tried to do the review thing, and we were like, I don't think that we are qualified to do reviews. I feel bad doing it. Like, I don't want to do.
We didn't want to be critical.
That wasn't the main thing. That was our thing.
With Eloquil, I always tell people, they're like, why are you guys, like, who writes for your team? Are you guys, like, professional writers? And I always go, no, we're just normal people. But sometimes isn't it nice to not watch something that's perfectly, like, there's nothing wrong with watching The Big Bang Theory, but it's written by a committee. Like, mainstream art is written by a group of people who are not writing what they like, they're writing what they think you will like.
Yeah,
so I tell people, like, if you're going to do it, just only review albums you like, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, and that's sort of what we were doing, but it turned into this thing where, like, but did you hear that line? Yeah, that line was awesome. did you hear that one?
So, I think it wasn't our niche.
We prefer just talking to people and, like, getting your perspective on what you wrote, you know?
I did tell my writing partner that you guys, like, I was jealous of the name of your podcast. Like, I was like,
I'm so glad. Yeah.
It took us a long time. We thought of so many puns. And then one time, finally, one of us was like, I'm not okay. I podcast. We were like, that's it. That's the one. We got to do it.
I Googled. I was like, emo songs. And the first one that came up, I was like, yeah.
That's got to be it. That's got to be it. So,
all right, Cam, thank you so much.
No, this was. Seriously,
I can't say it enough.
No, I genuinely had a good time. Sorry I told so many depressing stories.
Why are you sorry? No. You were just so... Happy to hear them.
I like talking about real stuff. So, like, it was so fun talking to you. We'll have to do it again sometime. I love it.
Yeah, I would love to be back on. I appreciate you guys again soon. Thank you.
All right. Bye, Cam. Bye.
Bye. I hope that my son and I have some things in common, so we can talk often and we'll share it all. I hope that my son and I will have some things in common, 'cause me and his mom will love each other. Oh, I hope I'm not wrong.
He told her that he felt he was just a quick burning cigarette and she had a whole pack.
So if you guys want to hear more from Cam, you can find him on eloquilt.com, or you can follow Hotel Books on Instagram or Twitter @hotelbooks. you know, just Hotel Books on Facebook as well, but that doesn't really require a handle, if I recall correctly. Mm-hmm. You know socials better than I do. It doesn't, right?
No. If you want to find us on social media, you can follow us at I'm Not Okay Pod on Instagram and Twitter. You can find us on Facebook at I'm Not Okay Podcast. You can find our Facebook group, I'm Not Okay Podcast Group, or you can email us at imnotokaypod@gmail.com.
All right, guys, if you feel like that was just a little bit unhinged, it's because I got on her ass about something completely ridiculous the first time she started saying it. Completely messed up her roll, and then it took her like 6 times after that to get back on it.
I was on the roll and I was there, I was doing it, and then you interrupted the roll and I could not recover.
For like the worst joke ever.
Oh my god. If you want to follow me, I'm at Slummy Thomas on Instagram and TikTok. I'm Slummy _ Thomas on Twitter because somebody else has Slummy Thomas because they suck.
Okay. I'm Brashbat on Instagram. And just a little reminder, if you liked the show, please subscribe, leave a rating, leave a review. These things help us a lot.
Also, word of mouth, tell your friends that you found a cool new podcast. Don't say the word cool, because then they'll think we're cool and we're not.
Absolutely not.
Say you found this podcast where these two idiots freak out about music and talk to some pretty cool people.
That's a good way of putting it.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks for tuning in.
I just did finger guns.
Yes, you did. On that note, goodbye.
Until next time, I'm Not Okay a Podcast. I like that the outro is always awkward, though. It makes me really happy.
What song was I gonna...
I don't fucking know.